Governor Larry Rodin lays out the first state budget with his name on it. From SDPB, today is Wednesday, December 3rd. This is In the Moment. We are broadcasting live today from the SDPB studios in Sioux Falls. This hour, we will recap yesterday's budget address from Pierre with our reporters who were there. Then we'll move into analysis with SDPB's Dakota Political Junkies. Let's start with an overview. Governor Larry Rodin lays out his state spending plan for fiscal year 27. What's in his budget proposal? SDPB's Jackson Dirks reports.
South Dakota, being a low-tax state, gets its primary revenues from the state's sales and use tax. While the tax is up slightly this fiscal year from the last, Rodin affirmed that they're lagging, telling the legislature, quote, "We don't have a ton of headroom." As a result, the Republicans' budget was lean. While it had a few cuts, it had few increases as well. Chris Carr is a Senate pro tempore. He says he thought Governor Rodin gave the legislature, quote, "a good framework."
And so we're getting back used to the norm, and we're all kind of looking for those big $100 million projects, and we're just not there. So I thought it focused on core government, and I like that, you know. And we do what we can. We don't spend what we don't have. Pretty simple principles. I think the governor stuck to that.
Carr added the legislature still can put their ideas into the budget through the process in the 2026 legislative session. Rodin outlined his plan to keep South Dakota, quote, "strong, safe, and free." The plan included one-time funding to bolster the state's infrastructure system and equipment, increase the number of full-time employees at the nearly built women's prison in Rapid City, add cameras to the Jamison Annex and the Sioux Falls Minimum Center, and move funds to support the Sioux Falls and Rapid City airport expansions. He also asked the legislature to increase the state's rainy day fund from 10% of the fiscal year budget up to 12.5%. Rodin says that's in response to slower revenue growth and weakness in the farm sector. Rodin's budget doesn't increase any budgets for K-12 education, state employees, and Medicaid healthcare providers. Those are often deemed the big three by legislators. Accordingly, many legislators said they'd like to see that number increase. Tim Rave is the president and CEO of the South Dakota Association of Healthcare Organizations. He says while he doesn't expect an increase, there is one silver lining for the Medicaid provider side.
I think the other bright side, if there was a bright spot, and I know the governor talked about it, was that the federal match assistance program, and that's, you know, confusing at best for everyone, but it's just really the match between the state and the federal government and what they pay in Medicaid. That's not going to go any higher, really. I mean, it can go a little bit, but we're really at minimal exposure there. So you won't see the swing that we've had the last couple of years next year. So that will certainly help.
Rave is referring to the state's federal match for Medicaid almost at 50%, something Rodin said is the highest it's ever been in South Dakota. Rave explains it further, saying the less mandatory Medicaid minimum eating into the state's budget is beneficial long term for his members.
That really frees up some ongoing money. It gets to be kind of in the weeds, but it's important to know that those things matter. Those things make a difference when I'm telling my members, hey, you know, let's look forward to next year. We don't probably have to worry about exposure on that. So, you know, hopefully that frees up some money for some ongoing increases.
On the education side, there's concern over the impact on school districts and their budgets. Rob Monson is executive director of the School Administrators of South Dakota.
But in our school districts, you know, we are also going to see increased costs with inflation, whether it's health insurance going up, cost of transportation, electricity, all those things. And without additional revenues of any sort, that's really going to put financial strain on a number of school districts.
He adds, there's an economic impact to this.
I think more people need to realize that we are the economic driver of a lot of things. We are one of the key people that educates the students to go into the workforce or into the tech schools or the universities, and that, you know, we're sort of the base of all of that operation.
Rodin's budget doesn't include state employee salary increases, but it does avoid raising health plan premiums for them. Rodin says $3 million out of the health plan reserves and plan changes are avoiding the cost increase instead of raises. Eric Olila is the executive director for the South Dakota State Employees Organization. He says he'd like to see the number closer to 3% to account for inflation.
The proposal for zero compensation increase for career state government employees is very disappointing. They had a subinflation raise last year of 1.25%. They had increased health care costs last year. And this year, so the proposal moving forward is zero. And while there's some additional money for health care for employees, it seems, if you look at the numbers, that there's still going to be a significant amount of money that employees will have to cough up extra for health care.
SDPB employees are state employees. Any budget proposal requires legislative approval. The legislature may make changes to the budget before it heads back to the governor's desk for final approval. I'm SDPB's Jackson Dirks.
And I'm Lori Walsh. After the break, SDPB's Jackie Hendry and CJ Keene join us. We'll have more reaction from South Dakota legislators. And later in the hour, we'll look at ways the 2026 race for governor crept in to the budget address. You're in the moment on listener-supported SDPB.
Thank you for your energetic support for SDPB during Giving Tuesday. A special thank you to Roy Lee and his dollar-for-dollar match. I am proud to report that we met Roy's match. Your support displays the value SDPB brings to your life, community, and to our state. If you didn't get a chance to donate during Giving Tuesday, you can donate anytime at sdpb.org/donate. And thank you.
Support for SDPB is provided by Augustana University in Sioux Falls, where students find their bold by discovering passions, pursuing purpose, and preparing for what's next. Learn more at augie.edu.
I'm Carl Gerke, and this evening on Jazz Nightly, we'll hear a festive mix of Afro-Caribbean rhythms and familiar jazz riffs with Dominican composer Socrates Garcia and his Latin Jazz Orchestra. Also on the program, local sounds by the JAS Quintet and classic tracks by Jerry Mulligan, Bill Evans, and Charles Mingus. You can join me at 8 Central, 7 Mountain, here on SDPB Radio.
Support comes from Monument Health, a community-based healthcare system with a mission to make a difference every day. With over 5,000 physicians and caregivers and serving communities in western South Dakota and eastern Wyoming. A member of the Mayo Clinic Care Network. Politics and Public Policy Reporting is supported by the Center for Western Studies at Augustana University.
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. We are broadcasting live today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. In about 10 minutes, we will welcome analysis from our Dakota political junkies. But first, a recap of lawmaker reaction to Governor Larry Roden's annual budget proposal. Joining me at the desk here in Sioux Falls, we have SDPB's Jackie Hendry. Welcome, Jackie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And connecting with us from SDPB's Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in our Rapid City offices, we have CJ Keene. Hey, CJ.
Hi, Lori. Happy to be here.
Jackie, let's start with you. What stood out to you from the governor's budget address?
I think what stood out to me and what stood out to a lot of people was that 0% increase for the big three was kind of the showstopper buried in there, sort of reflected without a ton of fanfare in the speech, very measured delivery from the governor. But as we heard in Jackson's feature just a few minutes ago, that's really the thing that a lot of people are looking at, 0% increases for education, for healthcare providers, for state employees, following a year where that increase really didn't even reach inflationary increases. So I think that'll be a big thing that people are watching. But also something I was wondering if we would hear about, and we did, was a mention of the rural health transformation funds that will be coming in from the federal government. That's an enormous sum, $500 million over the next 5 years, at least, that South Dakota stands to get from the federal government. Again, that's just spending authority. It's not state dollars, mm-hmm. but that I expect that will be a big topic of conversation.
All right. So how did legislators respond to the governor's proposal? What did you learn?
We had a really diverse opinion and diverse interpretations of the budget address. And that's even despite being, as most of us know, the supermajority Republican-controlled legislature, diverse opinions and interpretations across the board. We're going to start with Representative Will Mortensen. He's a Republican from the Fort Pierre area, and he described to me the budget address as pretty bleak.
...3% inflation, and so even if we'd had the same economic activity, We should have 3% growth, and we didn't. That means 0% for schools, for Medicaid providers, for state employees and folks protecting the public. And so there wasn't a whole lot of good news coming out of that budget.
Something else Representative Mortensen mentioned in the governor's speech, Governor Roden's reporting that last year was only the third time in the last 30 years that sales and use taxes went down. And so that was a source of concern for Representative Mortensen. But that wasn't necessarily the opinion of the other members of the legislature. Senator Chris Carr, a Republican from the Sioux Falls area, also part of Senate leadership as President Pro Tem, he focused less on South Dakota's, you know, more recent history and more on how South Dakota compares to other states, saying we still stand far above how other states are faring since the pandemic. Senator Carr also called attention to, again, that role of the federal government in our budget with attention to the Rural Health Transformation Fund.
They're one-time dollars for one-time projects. I hope that we can look for innovation in rural health care and how we deliver services with those dollars. I think a lot of bad incentives exist when you just start giving up big lumps of money. We saw that with COVID, and we saw, again, some other states didn't use those dollars, I think, in a wise manner. And so that's going to be my caution for our appropriators and our legislators, is that we are setting ourselves up for success and use those for that innovation, hopefully, for the future, so they can provide those services more efficiently.
Jackie, a little backdrop here is really what happened over the summer with property tax conversations and reports and committees. Tell us a little bit about how that played into the day.
Right. And these property tax conversations have been a growing theme over the last few years, like you said, this summer. Yet another committee, Senator Carr chaired this summer's Legislative Committee on Property Tax Relief. Nearly 30 recommendations from that committee whittled down to about 19 that we're likely to see as bills during this session. Some of those are related to regulations on how that revenue is used, some related to rates of taxation and so on. So finding that consensus is really going to be a challenge. But Senator Carr says he believes the committee has put forward good policy. Now it's about affording the tax relief. That's going to be the next challenge.
We traveled the state, and I know that there are folks in every corner talking about property taxes, the growth, the increases that we've seen, and we need to address it. I'm hoping that we can come together and provide some relief, but again, some good guardrails so those dollars aren't eroded instantly through spending and, you know, inefficiencies.
And again, that consensus is going to be key. Back to Representative Mortensen. He was not on this most recent committee related to property taxes, but he released his own kind of proposal within the last month related to sales taxes and things like this. But here was his take on how this session is likely to play out when it comes to property taxes.
You know, it's going to be a bit of throw a bunch of spaghetti on the wall and see what sticks seems to be the approach to me. I think I've heard 19 different proposals coming out of a legislative summer study. The governor's got a proposal. There were two or three that were introduced last year. I can see more or less merit in some, but I guess what I'm more interested in making sure that we don't, take the train off the tracks trying to deliver some kind of property tax cut. You got to remember 90% of property taxes go to roads, schools, and law enforcement. And so those are not areas that I'm looking to cut or to defund.
And Representative Mortensen goes on to say he is interested in some of the proposals that have come through the committee, but I think the phrase he used was measure twice, cut once. He's really worried about getting this right.
Yeah. Let's look ahead a little bit, because it is not without merit to notice that this is also an upcoming election year.
Mm-hmm. Right. And not to besmirch the honor and the decorum with which our representatives conduct themselves, but it's worth noting there's strategy that goes into public policy and into the way that these things go. I asked Representative Mortensen how he prepares with a high stakes legislative session. And here's what he had to say.
I think it's going to be really a keep your eye on the ball year for people who want to still accomplish the job that we were sent here to do. And so my core values aren't going to change. My work ethic and trying to find solutions to them isn't going to change. You know, I'm a little optimistic we're going to be able to get some meaningful improvements for the state this year. But boy, there'll be plenty of hot air.
And this is a space where Representative Mortensen and Senator Carr do seem to agree, and they're focused on, they're there to do their own job. Senator Carr also said that, you know, the legislature has faced similar challenges before, but he's there to focus on his role.
I'm here in the capacity as a senator, as the president pro tem. That's my focus. I don't care about those other races and what's happening. And I think if we do that and we are respectful towards each other and the ideas and take them for their face value and not who's proposing them, we will be successful. And at least we'll have conducted ourselves in a way that we can be proud of.
Really good stuff, Jackie. Let's bring CJ Keene from our Rapid City studios into the conversation. CJ, what were some of your key takeaways from the governor's message to lawmakers yesterday?
The word that I would use to describe this budget would be fiscally conservative, but also it had a bit of a mixed response among the people on the floor. But ultimately, everybody kind of agrees this is a very difficult, challenging budget year. There's still that post-COVID-19 curve that the state's kind of dealing with here. But some people do want more, especially when it comes to that big three funding, you know, the state employees, education, and healthcare. Of course, Jackie Hendry mentioned the diversity of opinions, and as in any state with a supermajority in the legislature, those internal factions are going to be fascinating to watch as we get into both an election year and this legislative session. But also that property tax battle is going to be huge, and it's definitely going to inform the wider budget conversation. Of course, there are nearly two dozen proposals out there already, some of which want to cut the general fund, which the governor is opposed to doing. It's going to be a very interesting next few weeks as we gear up for legislative session right after the new year.
CJ, what did you hear from legislators after the governor was done speaking yesterday?
A diversity of opinions, of course. There was really just no real there was consensus among some people, but it was a broad diversity of opinion, especially when it comes to what to do with what the governor left on the table. There was $14 million that were left unallocated that the governor says, get your fingerprints on, lawmakers. And it's going to be fascinating to see how that happens. Rapid City Republican Representative Mike Derby is an appropriator, and he says in this clip coming up here that it's going to be an interesting thing to watch as they prepare to move into the next funding phase.
As chair of appropriations, I'm not going to put my finger on the scale yet, and that's part of the discussion we'll have with our caucus is what do we want to do with that $14 million, and we'll prioritize that, and then we have to arm wrestle with the Senate and come up with a plan.
And of course, there you're starting to get into those internal factions that happen in a supermajority. On the other hand, though, it's important to remember that no matter how it's framed, every single budget proposal is just a suggestion from the governor, and they can burn this down and rebuild it from the ground up. They can take it wholesale. It really depends on how the legislature decides to attack this. However, when it comes to the other side, Representative Eric Mucky from Sioux Falls is a Democrat, and he says there's a key word that was left out of the governor's speech as we approach this key issue heading into the legislative session.
Though $14 million might seem like a lot of money to the average South Dakotan, you're packing that into about a $2.6 billion budget. So there's not a lot to work with. That means that we're going to have hard debates about that $14 million, but we're also going to look hard at the other $84 million that the governor has produced and said, is this actually what we need as a state right now? And is this the best and highest use of taking care of every South Dakotan? The message around affordability is going to be something that will dominate the session.
And it's important to remember with such divisions and diversity of opinion, it's going to be a few critical votes that sometimes will fall in the hands of Democrats that can make a big difference on key issues like property taxes, like budgets, like the big three. It's definitely going to be an interesting financial session for lawmakers.
Great stuff. CJ Keene, thank you so much for being here with us today. We appreciate it.
Happy to do it, Lori.
Jackie Hendry, thank you as well.
Thank you.
SDPB's live coverage of the governor's State of the State address airs Tuesday, January 13th. That's at 1 p.m. Central, noon Mountain. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we will welcome SDPB's Dakota Political Junkies for analysis of the governor's budget address and a few ways the 2026 campaign slipped between the lines of Roden's remarks and legislative response. You're in the moment on listener-supported SDPB.
On the next Fresh Air, President Trump strikes on alleged Venezuelan narco-terrorists in boats he claims are transporting drugs. We talk with Washington Post reporter Alex Horton. He broke the story of how the first targeted boat had a second strike intended to kill two survivors in the water, in compliance with Pete Hegseth's order to kill the entire crew. Join us.
Listen Wednesday at 2 and 7 Central on SDPB.
Support comes from the SDSU Jerome J. Lohr College of Engineering, launching young innovators into the aerospace field through NASA Space Exploration Design Competitions, leveraging AI, robotics, and automation.
You want to know what's going on in the world, not just the politics and breaking news, but the music, the art, the culture. Morning Edition from NPR News is here for all of it.
That is Miley Cyrus keeping the world on its toes. The new album.
That's Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter. They are in a new production.
Well, Lin-Manuel Miranda, thanks for the time and congratulations on 10 years.
Start your weekday mornings with us and catch conversations you might not expect.
From 5 to 9 Central, 4 to 8 Mountain on SDPB.
Support provided by Black Hills Community Theater, presenting That Show Business, a BHCT holiday gala. This year's holiday gala includes food, drink, and a performance filled with classic holiday songs. December 12th and 13th. More at bhct.org.
You are listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. We are broadcasting live today with analysis of Governor Larry Roden's budget address. We'll hear insight from former legislators Gene Hunhoff and Linda Duba a bit later in the hour. But first, SDPB's Dakota Political Junkies joining me in the studio now. We have Michael Card, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at the University of South Dakota, and seated next to him, John Hunter, Publisher Emeritus of the Madison Daily Leader and member of the South Dakota Newspaper Hall of Fame. Getting close and comfortable in the studio with papers and analysis ready. John, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for the invitation.
Dr. Card, welcome as well.
I'm pleased to be here as well. Thanks for the invitation.
Let's start with you, Mike, and some key takeaways, what you were either listening for and heard, or what maybe surprised you. Some key takeaways from the governor's speech.
Well, I think the primary takeaway from the speech is it's a slight budget. We're not planning on spending all of the money that's available to us. Certainly, as your previous speakers have told us, we're not going to give money to the big three, as they're called. And I think John will talk a little bit about do they belong together anyway, other right. than as a negotiating tactic. We're going to open up a new prison, but we didn't talk about what we're going to do with the old prison or what we have some idea of the decommissioning costs. We're going to increase the amount of money that we're putting into reserves, which is a significant amount, even if it's 2.5% of the 60% that's sales tax, because the 2.5% is the growth this year in sales tax. So that still leaves another $2 million plus the $14 million should they decide to take that $2.5 million. Those are the big ones.
Yeah.
But, you know, some others that are involved is we're going to spend money on airports, or at least expansion of the airport terminals in Rapid City and Sioux Falls.
There was a moment where he said early in the speech that the freedom to travel, and I put a question mark in my notes because I was waiting to hear what he was talking about, and then that turned into a delivery of this idea of expansion of an airport. But let's talk a little bit before we dive into some of what Mike has set up for us, John, about the overall tone and presentation. This is the first budget address that Governor Larry Roden has had his name on it. He adopted Kristi Noem's former governor's address last time. We've certainly heard him at the podium before, and we hear him across the state, but this is the first time he got up with slides and numbers and the budget itself. And what did we learn about him from that delivery and from the tone of the day?
I think we learned a lot. And the first thing was that, you know, there's few people who have been more experienced in this legislative process than Larry Roden. You know, 16 years in both chambers, 6 years as lieutenant governor, now as governor.
But there really weren't surprises. It wasn't though I've been holding this thing back for the whole time and now I'm going to pounce it on you. It really is kind of continuation of very Republican themes. Live within our means. This is the people's money. There are a lot of, I think, very much a carryover from previous, you know, sure. They talk about one-time expenditures being used or being funded with one-time sources. So that really, I think one takeaway was that there weren't surprises. To me, the zero increase for the big three did surprise me. I didn't expect that. But that's not in the, you know, right. big initiative or some big cut that's coming. It really, I think it was lacking of big surprises. And maybe that's what he chose as his theme was, let's keep this ship steady. We're doing really well. Yeah. Let's keep it going.
So CJ Keene mentioned, you know, sort of the COVID curve. And I'm thinking about the word normal and how he said this is sort of a return to normalcy after the pandemic. What do you think, John, and we'll start with you and then ask Mike the same question, about this idea of are we getting back to normal? And what does that mean economically? Because we are talking about the budget here.
Very much. There's never going to be 2 years alike. And this bump, remember, kind of separated us from the previous normal by 5 years. And a lot of things have changed that. Certainly South Dakota's economy has changed. What we are seeing, of course, is that this pretty heavy reliance on sales tax for state government does have its ups and downs. Its sales tax receipts can go up, can go down. And for those people who are saying, let's increase the sales tax even more and reduce property taxes with it, it would be more subject to economic swings than it is. One thing about property taxes, whether you like them or not, they are fairly steady. I mean, they're assessed whether you have a good year or not. So, yes, we are, I think, past the time when federal funds kind of come flowing in for a lot of things. So, yes, I do agree with CJ Keene, or I can't remember who he was interviewing. But it is much closer. But to say that a South Dakota economy is exactly the same as it was five years ago is not true.
That's what I was wondering, Mike, because we have the in-migration from COVID. We have all the infrastructure expenditures that happened when that federal money came through. We have changes to tax premium credits for healthcare and the marketplace. All sorts of things are different than what they were in, say, 2019.
Inflation.
And inflation. And, exclamation
right,
point.
You know, and in one sense, the inflation should be and maybe helping increase the amount of sales tax collections that we're making so that we have 2.5% more revenue this year to spend than we've had in other years. But it may also be hiding the fact that we're not spending as much money as we would have been 5 years ago.
And it's costing the state more money to build.
To build, right.
And to do any of these infrastructure build-outs. You know, prison. Airport expansion.
I went to the Minneapolis Federal Reserve Bank's inflation calculator and what would cost us a dollar today would have only cost us 83 cents in 2021. Mm-hmm. So we're at 17 cents there. So that's what leads me to think maybe we're hiding how little spending is going on. Even though we're increasing 2.5% to be at the same level of purchases, we're probably not purchasing as much.
What about what he said there about South Dakota no longer being like a low-income state because our per capita income was higher than the rest of the nation? I sent an email earlier this morning to Josie Harms with the governor's office asking for, you know, what exactly the source of that information was. I was looking at some sources online. You know, we're better than maybe the national average in some areas, not as strong as some other states, better than other states. And it got me wondering about this whole idea of how we make comparisons. What are we comparing ourselves to? Our old selves, the, you know, North Dakota, Minnesota, the nation. When are comparisons useful? And when do they sort of fall flat? Because that's another thing that I feel like is the normalcy. The pandemic, the comparisons and policy were really stark.
I'm glad you brought that up because brings up a whole set of issues. One, let's start with the inflation thing that Mike was talking about. Remember, sales tax, based on consumer purchases mostly, and those, but the inflation for those can be different than what the state spends its money on,
right?
Which is, you know, teachers, and I mean, we spend on all sorts of things. But so those inflation rates may not even be the same. The comparison that you're talking about, Lori, I think are at least somewhat political in nature. This, like, yeah, we're better than North Dakota, or we have lower taxes than Minnesota, or whatever those kinds of things are. Those are positioning the conversation so that they can achieve some agenda goal. They say, look, we need to lower taxes because North Dakota has lower taxes than us.
Right.
Someone might say the opposite. Like, look, Minnesota's got a lot bigger taxes than us. We should be increasing our taxes. So I think people pick and choose those. We saw that through this speech, the kind of the comparisons that you make, and that's fine. We saw it during the Noem administration, maybe all the other governors, where you kind of pick and choose those comparisons to fit what you want to do with your agenda.
Yeah. How do we know we're doing well? Yeah.
And no matter who's elected in 2026, I would expect those good for me comparisons to continue, and that's to be expected. You know, that there are four people running for governor, one of which is actually the governor right now. You know, and so he tried to shut down the property tax thing. He says, we'll do that in the state of the state. There isn't any money that I can see that's allocated towards property tax relief. With one day just to look through the budget book, there's a lot out there.
Yeah. I want to hear a little bit from his speech with a clip. First, we're going to deal with this idea of, like, what is the moment that Larry Roden is giving this speech in from an economic standpoint. And here he is talking a little bit about the challenges in agriculture.
Ag is king in South Dakota. When ag does well, the state does well. But when ag struggles, our growth tends to slow down. It's a tough time to be a crop farmer, and it's not just in South Dakota. Corn, wheat, and soybean prices are off their high point from a few years ago. On the other hand, beef prices are at record high, but that alone has not been enough for ag to keep pace overall. Historically, there's been a correlation between our sales tax collection and farm income. So let's pray for rain and for President Trump to be successful in his trade negotiations.
So, John Hunter, a little nod there to the current administration trade negotiations, but a bit softer than we've heard. This speech was not filled with a lot of praise or blame. It was filled with a lot of facts and figures and principles. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, yes. That is somewhat of a reference there, too. But the irony, I think, in that agriculture is king in South Dakota and its influence is that there's not a lot that state government can do about that. They really can't, raise crop prices or reduce input prices or anything like that. We have tried in the past, I didn't hear anything about it today, to really try to boost the value-added ag sector. We didn't hear much about this.
Yeah. But which might show up in the state of the state.
It sure could.
Yeah.
But there was, again, some idea that hopefully that at least Governor Roden is hoping that the tariff situation would somehow ultimately benefit South Dakota. Now, there's two sides to that, too. If we're in a trade war with China and we're not selling soybeans to China, then that would be hurting crop prices. So I think that when he said, let's hope he's successful, I think that's a rational and non-political thing to say. We all hope South Dakota succeeds also.
Right. We all hope agriculture, we all hope the farmers do well.
Absolutely.
There is this sense too, Mike Card, about the future of ag and the future of the economy and tying all that together with the drop in federal funding. So where else did you hear federal funding was kind of going down or impacting the state budget?
I didn't hear much talk about that other than when you look at the budget book, you do notice that there's a 27% decrease in federal funding in our budget.
Yeah.
And so we don't know how much of that is going to continue, how much the efforts will be to reduce the federal expenditures. Again, that's beyond the control of the state. Right. But in terms of the federal funds that are being budgeted, there's a substantial decrease, or excuse me, 23% decrease in federal funds.
Yeah. Let's hear one more clip from the speech, and this one where he is really talking about how state government is funded. And then, John, we'll pick up on this idea of the big three being together or being separate. But here is Governor Larry Roden from yesterday's state budget address.
Side of education, taking care of people and public safety, only 4% of our budget goes to the rest of state government. That's not enough to move the needle. I share the desire to cut property taxes, but slashing health care, education, and public safety is not the way to do it. I have a much better, more targeted plan to address property taxes, and I look forward to sharing the specifics with you at the State of the State.
John, here we go again with property taxes and this nod to, I am aware that there are people out there, I would argue those people would be maybe other people who are running to be governor of South Dakota. They are saying we should slash state government. They need to come in here and like carve it up. But look at the charts, he says. There's not a whole lot to cut here. That was another theme I thought I heard from lawmakers throughout the day, which was we're doing pretty well on our responsibility for how we spend money. What did you hear?
I thought it was very responsible. I love that whole clip, him talking about this, that, yeah, we all want lower taxes, right? Isn't that a common theme? Let's not do that on the backs of the wrong – let's not cut expenses in the wrong places. Let's not do dumb things just in that name. And that's what can happen in political years, in election years, when people say, I'm here to cut your taxes, and all of a sudden you do damage in some other area. So I thought it was very responsible that Larry was talking about that. He, you know, I think – he doesn't get much credit for the property tax thing that he passed last session. Granted, it was small. It was not the big monster thing. You know, some political candidates say, I want to eliminate property taxes. What a silly idea. It's hundreds of millions of dollars, you know. So I thought he was very responsible, and he's saving something apparently for us a little later on.
Geez, yes.
Maybe not completely fleshed out, but I don't think he deserved – I don't think he got much credit that he did deserve on the home, you know, owner-occupied thing that cap that he put in last year.
Let's go back to what Mike brought up in the beginning, which is the big three: state employees, education funding, and community service providers in the Medicaid service area. Why are those together, John? Why are the big three called the big three?
Yeah, that's a relatively recent phenomenon that people started doing that. Those are areas that generally are funded at percentage increases and left to distribute to either the bureaucracy or to local school districts and so forth. So it's kind of this big bulk number that you hand off to someone else. I think they got grouped together for convenience because each of those groups are asking for money. And if someone says, they got 2%, I only got 1%, what's why that? And I think it's for convenience. Frankly, they're very different programs, very different animals. Think of this: state aid education, which is K-12, does not include higher education, is very different than state salaries or employees throughout the state. It's just different. And Medicaid support, and that's nursing homes, that's LifeScape, that's children. I mean, it's very different than the others too. So I'd rather they not be combined, and that we could talk about them, but I'm sure whoever ends up get the shorter number is going to be mad about that, right? So I think it's political expediency. I think that they group them together, but they are very important things, as Governor Roden said, and I would not shortchange any of those, right? I mean, if you say, what are great responsibilities of state government? He said taking care of people. Law enforcement is part of that. I mean, it's not, there's a lot of other things to it, but education and so on. So I would hope that during the session that someone somewhere can come up with a little bit more money for those particular programs.
Which brings us to two things I want to make sure we touch on before we close, which is the reserves, this idea that the rainy day fund, Mike, should go from 10% to 12 or 12.5%, and the $14 million left for lawmakers to prioritize. What stood out to you with those two things?
Well, I mean, the first one that really stood out to me was that we're changing from 12%, or excuse me, from 10% to 12.5%, and that leaves a fairly large chunk of money, even if it's only sales tax, which is 60% of our budget. We're still talking about $2 to $3 million, but if we're talking about the entire budget, we're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of $60 million. So
Eric Mucky said $70 million would be freed up. Yeah. So depending on how you slice it, so it's a big slice.
Right. So there is money out there, and the question would be: is do we need that 12% as a rainy day fund when there? You know, we're one of the few states that have rainy day funds that doesn't specify when you have to refill the rainy day. We've got a cap on it. It can't be any more between the two big rainy day funds. You can't have 25%, but that would, I think people would go looking to how to spend that money if we had 25%. If we have 10%, most of us can find a way to deal with 10% of a cut, and if we have that money set aside, that's a good thing. But we don't note when a rainy day fund is. You know, I remember, I believe it was 1998 when we had the big snowstorms that Governor Janklow noted, well, it's not raining, but it sure has been snowing because we had lots of road damage expenses, and lots of other expenses simply because of the weather.
Right.
And now we're looking at possibly recessionary times and increased costs. So we may be needing to dip into that 10% rainy day fund. But it'd be nice if we specified under what conditions actually to do that. And that would keep some of the spending down, but it would also make sure that the money is available so that next year we didn't have to replenish the rainy day fund if it's not raining.
Yeah.
Forgive my metaphors, but
The $14 million, it's been more than 10 years since a governor has said, here is a line item that you get to prioritize. But then he also didn't fund the big three, so.
And $14 million won't make a big dent there, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even remember the last time. I can't remember who did that or whenever that was left over. But that'll quickly get absorbed into the discussions. And as some legislators had told Jackie Hendry, this is a starting point. That's his proposal. We'll put our own together and work off that.
Yeah, the governor proposes, the legislature disposes. You know, we have to remember we have a separation of powers. In our Constitution and in our statutes, we make the governor present a budget. You know, it wasn't that long ago that the governors weren't really all that full-time a job, and neither are our legislators. And so, for better or for worse, we are now having more and more full-time legislators with summer studies and the like, right. And our governor is certainly full-time now that they're going to be looking to see how we can best allocate our resources. And we've got a gubernatorial election, and at least there are agents, if not candidates, in the legislature who will try to find a place to put that $14 million.
Last time that happened, 2012, for fiscal year 2024, Governor Dennis Dugard did that. Mike Card, Professor Emeritus of Political Science with the University of South Dakota, and John Hunter, Publisher Emeritus of the Madison Daily Leader, I thank you.
Thank you, Lori.
Thank you, Lori.
We're going to head to the lawmakers after the break. Linda Duba and Gene Hunhoff are up next. You're on listener-supported SDPB.
On the next Radio Lab.
Out of like 6,000 some species of mammals, they thought we were the only ones.
The medical mystery.
We were just freaks.
Of menopause.
It was assumed that human females were the only species that went through it.
And then scientists learned about
Granny.
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 The matriarch of all matriarchs.
Hunter-in-chief.
The one in charge.
These females are the repositories for ecological wisdom.
That's on the next Radio Lab.
Listen Saturday at noon Central. 11 Mountain
Program funding by the Great Plains Zoo and Butterfly House and Aquarium. From corals and butterflies to rhinos and tigers, two locations to explore the whole wild world year-round. More at greatzoo.org and butterflyhouseaquarium.org.
In the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic, a movie that had been released years earlier became a surprise hit. It was a film about a global pandemic.
On the Warner Brothers catalog, I think it was ranked 270, and it had shot up to being the second most popular movie on the catalog overnight.
Why we're drawn to dark and scary stories, this week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
Listen Saturday afternoon at 1 Central. Noon Mountain.
Support for SDPB comes from Poet. Poet creates American-made bioproducts in partnership with more than 30,000 farmers, processing 1 billion bushels of local corn each year. Poet, rooted in American grit. Poet.com.
You are listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. We are broadcasting live today with analysis of Governor Larry Roden's budget address. We're going to close the hour with insight from two former state legislators, both of whom have plenty of experience with budgetary oversight. Linda Duba represented District 15 in the State House of Representatives from 2019 to 2024. She's a Democrat. And Jean Hunhoff is the longest serving female member of the South Dakota State Legislature. First elected in 2000 to the House of Representatives, she represented District 18 in both the House and then the State Senate. She spent more than a decade on the Joint Appropriations Committee. Hunhoff is a Republican, and both Duba and Hunhoff are joining us via Zoom. Representative Linda Duba, welcome back to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, Lori.
Senator Hunhoff, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Senator Hunhoff, let's start with you. Give us some of your key takeaways from Governor Roden's budget address yesterday. What did you hear?
Well, ironically, when he started out and certainly identified the three parameters that he guided him in developing his budget, people's money, balanced budget, and one-time dollars not going for ongoing expenses. I think that has been the consistent message in all the times that I have served in the legislature, and I appreciated that he was using that to reinforce his recommendations that he was making to the legislature as to the kind of budget he's going to have this year. You know, he's very candid up front and about what we're seeing now with anticipated revenues, also with expenses. And I think he was realistic in saying that, you know, there's certainly an emphasis that we have to cut, but where do you cut? Because we are in the present really near the bone of state government. I think the priorities that he identified have been consistently messaged in his now announced campaign for a permanent position as the next governor of South Dakota. And so he was identifying those areas that he's been hearing from the public. I guess it's what I didn't hear, and you're not going to, and unfortunately as an appropriator, that's where I'm looking at. I'm really interested in the areas that he has funded, those that he had not funded, and what's the background for coming to those conclusions. And again, he's not going to have that in his budget address, and maybe in his state of the state he will have that. But I think, of course, the biggest target, and I was just listening to the two individuals you were interviewing prior talking about the big three not getting an increase, and that discussion, should the big three be the three and should they be differentiated out? I think when you look at South Dakota, those three areas are really prime. You're talking about workforce when you're talking about state employees, when you're talking about healthcare, you're talking about providers, access, and workforce in that arena. And then when you talk about schools, it's the same thing. You're talking about a workforce that you're trying to have so that you can prepare our children. And the ultimate end of the day, it is that we keep our kids in South Dakota, having them be able to achieve their dreams, their aspirations, and stay in the state of South Dakota. I think that was a piece that I thought was missing as far as in the whole picture for all his funding priorities, certainly in important areas. But I'm still looking at, you know, he didn't really touch on ag, doing anything there. He didn't touch on tourism, you know, doing that when we were talking about the revenues and that, but that's really what support the state. But the bottom line is, he did allude to the data. He did use data a lot, and I appreciated that. But, you know, I keep going back. How do we drill down on that data and get some answers that lead us in the right directions? I'll stop with that.
Yeah. Representative Duba, what did you hear and what maybe didn't you hear from the governor's address?
Well, I have to say, as always, Senator Hunhoff is extremely thorough. I heard, again, there was... I do appreciate his use of data, although data can be manipulated in many ways. What I did hear him say is he talked about, you know, our per capita.
Mm-hmm. Income, per capita income.
Which per capita, for those of you listening at home, is different than median household income, which is the better indicator. So a per capita is a measure of personal income divided by the total population, okay? Calculated by the Bureau of Economic Analysis, where we should really be looking. And, you know, that quote unquote is 15th. Our per capita is ranked 15th among U.S. states, by the way, not the highest. And then our median household income actually is right around 72,000, and the national median household income is 78,000. Right. So what we need to understand is, what kind of a picture are we painting for South Dakota? And I'm going to say the word affordable. What's our affordability for our basic South Dakotans? We know healthcare costs are rising. The governor did mention that, and I appreciated his commitment to meet the needs of our Medicaid and our Medicaid rates, because as Senator Hunhoff knows, we worked hard for 4 to 5 years to bring those rates up, to increase the number of people that are working in providers, and to bring providers back into the fold. Our people need help, whether it be behavioral health, nursing home health, disability health, just basic needs for our Medicaid and Medicaid expansion. All of those things are important. So I appreciated he talked about the importance of that and meeting that need.
I want to jump in, Linda, and ask you what you thought of the social services, him saying, you know, I think we made cuts that were too steep last time, and we're going to put some of that back.
I heard that, and I was silently applauding that, because when you cut like that, you cut services. And as Senator Hunhoff has said, I don't know where people think our budget is bloated. It is not. It's very close to the bone. Could we be more efficient, more effective by the use of technology? Absolutely. But you cannot cut services. And we did that last year, and it affected people. That's important.
When we talk about this $14 million and legislators being able to set some of those priorities, Senator Hunhoff, where would you begin with that conversation in a caucus? And then we'll ask Linda Duba the same question. But from a caucus standpoint, $14 million, where do you start?
Well, you start with your caucus as to what they see as priorities, because this is one-time funding. And so anything you're going to fund is a one-time. So if you're going to do something existing, that's existing, and add to it, or if you're going to do, you know, something else, like I said, it's one time, and at the end of that, you know, I'm going to have to go back and say I was a little surprised by that. I mean, we're talking about a budget that's very tight and very focused, and yet at the end of the day, there's $14 million at the bottom line that I'm going to give to the legislature for them to decide. You know, in my time in the legislature, as I think it was alluded to your previous speaker, that was never done. You know, if things are so dire, I'm not sure if that is the right avenue to go, because, again, this will be one-time funding. And part of that is, when you do that, you have to recognize that you're not going to be able to use any dollars toward whatever you give those projects to in the next fiscal year, because it's only one time. So there'll be a big discussion in the caucus as to what those priorities be. And $14 million is not enough to look at to say, give it to the big three, because again, that's one-time funding. You wouldn't be able to do anything else. So I guess it would just be the discussion that you're going to have and find out what's there. And if there's some areas that some deficit you need to look at, and but it'll be a big discussion between, you know, both houses as to where those dollars should go. And then the other thing is, what will it go to at the end of the day? Because we've been hearing more policy things arising during the summer in all the work groups that have been meeting. And so will this go towards something for policy development or something in that direction?
Yeah. We only have a few minutes left, but Linda Dubé, I want to go back to something that you said, and we heard Eric Mucky say it as well at the top of the hour about affordability. So I am hearing Democrats talk about affordability and the cost of living and inflation in South Dakota, but we just heard President Trump this week say affordability is a hoax, and he doesn't want to talk about it. The word affordability might not take the imagination of the entire state house in one unified voice, but what it costs to live in South Dakota will. In like a minute, what do you want to add to that about the truth on the ground and the reality of people's lives?
The truth on the ground is that groceries are up, rents and home prices are up, rents are more expensive, healthcare is more expensive. You know, gas, quote unquote, is coming down, but you still have to put gas in your car. Childcare, we never hear anything about that. And that affects the workforce. And, you know, I'm working on a coalition in Sioux Falls, but to help bring more spots. But at the end of the day, affordability, call it the, I think, you know, people have said it's the economy, stupid. Yes. More money coming out of people's pocketbooks for less. And that's what we need to be thinking about and focusing on, whether it be at the state level or the national level. And I do want to say one more thing. I heard him say, we're going to give some money back to public broadcasting. Yay. Let's keep that up.
Transparency.
Hey, that's important.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Transfer. That's a backfill from those federal dollars that have been cut, which you heard peppered throughout his speech as well, different areas that the federal money wasn't coming and different places where the state was going to step up and fill some of those needs. You have 15 seconds, Linda. 15.
We don't know what the budget looks like because we don't know what those federal dollar losses look like. And so the devil is in the details, as Gene says. That's when the real work starts.
Representative Linda Dubé, thank you so much for being here with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Senator Jean Hunhoff, thank you as well. We appreciate your insight and time.
Thank you.
That is our show for today. We hope that it served you. You can find all of SDPB's coverage online at sdpb.org/news. Today's program was produced by Chris Loffrey and Jackson Dirks. Josh Chilson is our news director. Kara Hetland is our director of journalism. Colton Nicholson is our engineer today. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. We thank you for listening.